Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bareback Facts. Today, I have a special treat. We're going to be talking about a number of things today. Specifically, we're going to talk about the role of Nidhoggr in the realm of Norse mythology. But before we can talk about that, we need to understand the Norse cosmos. And today, I'm going to explain it to you. At the center of it all is a mysterious and magical place known as Yggdrasil. It is the center of all life and all worlds that exist. And within it are nine worlds. Yggdrasil itself is known as the World Tree. It is in the middle of Asgard, where the gods and goddesses live. It is the Tree of Life and an eternal green ash tree. The branches stretch out all over the nine worlds in Norse myth and extend up and away and above throughout the heavens. It is carried by three enormous roots. The first root from Yggdrasil is in Asgard, the home of the gods. The next to this root is a well-named Eyrd's Well. It is where the gods have their daily meetings. And the second root from Yggdrasil goes all the way down to the land of the giants. It is known as Jotunheim. That is what the land of the giants is called. And next to this root is Mimir's Well. And finally, we have the third root from Yggdrasil, which goes all the way down to Niflheim, close to the well of Hvelvgemar. Now, it is here that Nidhogg rests. Now, before we present Nidhogg, I want to explain a little bit the nine worlds and the significance of Yggdrasil, because it is the center of all that is and all that ever will be within Norse mythology. Within Yggdrasil are nine worlds that are held together by the branches of this great tree. The first we will talk about briefly is Niflheim, and it literally translates to the world of mists, the mist world. It is the world of fog and mists. It is the darkest and coldest region in the world, according to Norse mythology. It is the first of the nine worlds and is placed in the northern region. The eldest of the three wells are located in Niflheim, which is called Hvelvgemar, bubbling, boiling spring, and it is protected by Nidhogg. Now, it is said that all cold rivers come from the well called Hvelg, and it is said to be the source of the elven rivers in Norse mythology. The well Hvelvgemar is the origin of all living, and the place where every living being will go back to. The next world, and I don't want to spend too much time on these because they are quite in-depth. The next is called Muspelheim, the land of fire. And in Old Norse, it is Muspelheimir. It was created far to the south of the world in Norse mythology. It is a burning hot place filled with lava, flames, sparks, and soot. It is also the place of the fire giants and fire demons. It is ruled by the giant Sutir, who is the sworn enemy of the Aesir gods. It is said that in the end time, Sutir will ride out with his flaming sword in hand at Ragnarok, the end of the world, and the coming and the bringing of the never-ending winter. And Sutir will then attack Asgard, the home of the gods, and turn it into a flaming inferno. Next, we have Asgard, a place that possesses a rainbow bridge. And for those of you very familiar with Thor's lovely comics, you probably have some general idea of what Asgard is, but it is in the middle of the universe. It's high up in the sky, and it is Asgard. It is the home of the gods and goddesses. The male gods in Asgard are called the Aesir, and the female gods are usually referred to as the Ashtonadur. Odin is the ruler of Asgard and the chief of all the Aesir. And of course, he's married to Frigg. She's the queen, and inside the gates of Asgard is Valhalla, the place where half of the Vikings known as the Einherjar that died in battle will go for the afterlife, and the other half goes to Folkvanger, which is the hall of Freya. Just an FYI, you don't want to go to Valhalla because all you get to do is fight, feast, and kill it, die over and over again until the end days. So, just an FYI, clear that up. Folkvanger is like the land of milk and honey. That's that's kind of where you want to end up. Also, it's the personal, you could be the personal courtesan of, or courtier, I should say, as a male. You could be the personal courtier of Freydis, or Freya. Midgard is the home of the humans. It is one of the nine worlds in which all humans are located. It literally translates to Middle Earth. Interesting that Tolkien uses the same terminology to disguise his, to, you know, talk about his world that he created. He didn't really create it. He kind of just stole it. But that's not the point. This area is the land where humans live, the land of mortal men. It is in the middle of the universe below Asgard, and Midgard and Asgard are connected by Bifrost, the Rainbow Bridge. Midgard is surrounded by an enormous ocean that is said to be impassable. Well, of course, the world is completely covered, you know, 70% covered in water, so, you know, that kind of helps. The ocean within Norse myth is said to be protected by another very enormous and powerful entity within Norse mythology known as Jormungandr, the Midgard serpent, a serpent so vast that it's said to encircle the entirety of the world and biting at its own tail. It is said that Odin and his two brothers, Vili and Ve, created humans from an ash log, the man, and from an elf. The men were created from ash logs, and from an elm log, the woman was created. So, interesting to note. Now we proceed to the next world on our list, and it's Jotunheim, the home of the giants, also called Jotunheimer or Utgardir. It is the home of the giants, also known as the Jotuns. They are the sworn enemies of the gods, and their land consists mostly of rocks, wilderness, and dense forests, so that the giants themselves live from fish in the rivers and the animals in the forest because there is no fertile land in their land. The whole world was created from the corpse of the first giant named Ymir. It was Odin and his brothers, Vili and Ve, who killed him, thus sparking a very deadly and very much unending war between the giants and the Aesir. The giants and the Aesir, of course, are always fighting, but it also happens from time to time that love affairs between the Aesir and the giants will occur. Loki, as well, also comes from Jotunheim, but is accepted by the Aesir due to a blood pact that he has with Odin. Jotunheim is separated from Asgard by the river Iving, which never freezes over, and it lies in the snowy regions on the outermost shores of the ocean. Mimir's Well of Wisdom is in Jotunheim beneath the Midgard root of the ash tree Yggdrasil. The stronghold of Utgard is so big that it is hard to see the top of it, and there the feared Jotun king Utgard Loki lives. Utgard is carved from blocks of snow and glistening icicles, so kind of a scary place. Then we have Vanunheim, home of the Vanir. Vanunheim, or Vanunheimer, is the home of the Vanir gods. The Vanir gods are an old branch of gods. They are the masters of sorcery and magic and are widely acknowledged. Nobody knows whence the land actually lays or even how it looks. When the war between the Aesir and the Vanir ended, three of the Vanir came to live in Asgard. They are known as Njord and his children Freya and Freyr. They are considered to be fairer than the Aesir and are a separate sect of gods entirely. Next, we have Alfheim, the home of the Light Elves. Alfheimer, or Ljotheimer, is right next to Asgard in the heavens. The celestial Light Elves, who are said to be beautiful creatures and are considered to be guardian angels, their land is ruled by the god Freyr, who is queen of the Alfheim halls. The Light Elves are minor gods of nature and fertility, and they can help or hinder humans with their knowledge of magic. They also are often delivered an inspiration for art or music to mortals. Alfheim is said to be an incredibly beautiful place to be. Then we have Svartalfheim, the land of the dwarves and black elves. It's also known as Svartalfheimr and Nidvellir. It is the home of the dwarves and black elves who live in rocks, caves, and underground. Hreidmar was the king of Svartalfheim. Svartalfheim means the dark fields. The dwarves, who are masters of craftsmanship, abide there, and the gods of the Asgard themselves have received many powerful gifts from the dwarves, such as Thor's hammer, the magical ring Draupnir, and also Odin's spear Gungnir, said to never miss its mark. Then we have, lastly, Helheim, home of the dishonorable dead. This is where all the dishonorable dead, thieves, murderers, and those the goddesses and gods feel are not brave enough to go to Valhalla or Folkvanger. Helheim is ruled by the evil goddess Hel. Helheim is a very grim and cold place, and any person who arrives here will never feel joy or happiness again. And it is said that Hel will use all the dead in her realm at Ragnarok to attack the gods and goddesses, which will bring about the end of the world, as mortals and gods alike know it, bringing about a never-ending winter. Now, before we proceed any further, I want to go back and touch on one of the figures we talked about with the Nine Worlds. We're moving a little bit faster than I anticipated, so we're doing good. I want to talk about Jormungandr, because it's important that we talk more about Jormungandr, because he's kind of a big deal, all right? Before we get to Nidhogg, I want to mention the importance of Jormungandr. Jormungandr, also known as Jormungandr, it translates roughly to Great Beast, but he's most often referred to in the mythology as the Midgard Serpent. He is described as being a very large snake or dragon who lives in the ocean that surrounds the realm of men in the visible world, and said to be so enormous that so enormous is he that his body forms a circle around the entirety of the mortal realm. He's one of the three children of Loki and the giantess Angerboda, along with Hel and Fenrir. Important to note that Hel, the ruler of the undead, and Fenrir, the Fenris wolf, said to be the untamable and basically the bringer about of the fall of Odin. Odin's bane himself are all children of Loki. The god Thor is Jormungandr's specific enemy. Out of all the gods of Asgard, Thor and Jormungandr are permanently entwined in a rivalry with one another. Two battles recorded between them were counted in the Edda. In one, Thor attempts to catch Jormungandr and fails to pull him up, only when the giant Hymir, who was terrified that this will bring about Ragnarok, severs the line and sends the serpent back down to the depths of the ocean. In an attempt to confront Jormungandr, Thor actually attempts to rip Jormungandr out of the ocean and club him with his hammer. The giant is afraid that the boat will tip and this will bring about the end times, and so he cuts the line, making the Midgard serpent fall back into the depths. When Ragnarok does, however, arrive, Thor and the Midgard serpent are destined to meet one another in combat, and destiny says that they will kill one another. This makes Jormungandr particularly important in the grand scheme of things because Thor is the hero god of mankind. He is the preserver of Midgard. He is the protector of the realm of men, and Jormungandr is his ultimate destiny. Jormungandr and he will meet on the field at Ragnarok, and they will slay one another. Is likely a being that already featured heavily in the religion of the original Germanic tribes, as evidenced by his existence in later pre-Christian religions of different branches of the Germanic peoples. Continental Germans attributed earthquakes to his movements well into the Middle Ages. It is said that Jormungandr trembled. The massive coil that was his body consistently trembled as he attempted to adjust and get comfortable as, you know, being a massive serpent that encircles the entirety of the globe takes its toll. You start to get itchy and you want to shed your skin and get continuously bigger. So I mean, you gotta continue to shiver. Jormungandr is not alone, however, in slaying gods. Hel and Fenrir are also prominent figures within Norse mythology that have a great deal to do with what we're going to be talking about today, the cosmos. Hel herself is a giantess slash goddess. She's kind of a bit of both, who rules over Helheim, the underworld where many of the dead dwell. Her name's meaning of hidden has to do with the fact that the underworld and the dead are hidden or buried beneath the ground. The daughter of Loki and the giantess Angraboda, whose name is Anguish Boding, roughly translated, and therefore the sister of the wolf Fenrir and the world serpent Jormungandr. This makes her part of an incredibly dangerous and disreputable family. She is generally presented as being greedy, harsh, or cruel, and at least indifferent to the concerns of both the living and the dead. Her personality is little developed in what survives of Old Norse literature. She's mostly mentioned only in passing, although Snorri Sturluson, one of the premier translators of Norse myth and one of the retellers of the Edda, describes her as her appearance as being half black, half white, and with a perpetually grim and fierce expression on her face. Earlier poems in which she features prominently describe her as being half dead and half alive, thus hinting at the half black, half white portions of her body. Part of her body is actually dead. Part of her body is alive. She's got one foot in the grave all the time, essentially. The really only surviving myth in which she features prominently is that of the death of Baldur. Baldur is one of the beloved gods who is actually slain by Loki, and the gods send an emissary named Hermod to Hel in the hopes of retrieving him from the land of the dead. Despite pleading with Hel, telling her how every living thing was in sorrow over the loss of Baldur, Hel doesn't give up her prize. She tells Hermod in a taunting way that she would only consent to release Baldur if every last thing in the universe wept for him. As Hermod and the other gods went around and got almost everything in the cosmos to weep for Baldur, only one giantess, who was probably Loki in disguise, refused to cry. And because of this, the terms of Hel's offer were not met, and Hel kept Baldur in her cold clutches for all time. Because of how sparsely defined her character is, scholars view Hel as more of a late literary personification of the grave rather than a goddess who was probably worshipped or appeased in her own right. Now, we move on to the last great entity that threatens the cosmos of the Norse myth, and that is Fenrir, also known as the Fenris Wolf, he who dwells in the marshes. It is the most infamous of the many wolves in Norse mythology, and of course, probably the most infamous figure within Norse mythology aside from Odin and Thor. His importance is demonstrated by his being depicted on numerous surviving runestones, not to mention his ubiquity in Old Norse literary sources. He is the son of Loki and the giantess Angraboda, which makes him the brother of both Jormungandr and Hel, of course. And as recounted more fully in the Binding of Fenrir, the Aesir gods raised Fenrir themselves in order to keep him under control and prevent him from destroying the Nine Worlds. Fenrir grew to an astonishingly fast pace, however, and eventually the gods decided that they needed to chain him up because he was running through the Nine Worlds thing that he wanted to do. Their first two attempts to bind Fenrir were unsuccessful, while the gods, cunning gods, eventually convinced Fenrir that it was only a game, a test of his strength. He broke through all the fetters they tried quite easily. Now, the third attempt, the gods had the dwarves forge the strongest chain that has ever been created, meant to be able to hold the universe together itself, which nevertheless gave the appearance of being very light and even soft to the touch. Once the gods presented this to Fenrir with his third fetter, he became suspicious and refused to be bound with it unless one of the gods would stick his or her hand in their mouth as a pledge of good faith. Only the brave god Tyr was man enough to do it, and knowing that it would mean the loss of his hand because, of course, he knew they were going to betray him. When Fenrir finds himself unable to break free of his bonds, he rips Tyr's hand from his arm, and the chain was then tied to a boulder and a sword placed in Fenrir's jaws to hold them open. As he howled wildly and ceaselessly, a foamy river called Expectation is said to have flowed from his mouth. Now, as the river's ominous name implies, this is not to be the end of Fenrir. For Ragnarok, Fenrir will break free of his bonds, because these bonds were not intended to hold him forever. And he would run throughout the world with his lower jaw against the ground and his upper jaw in the sky, devouring all that existed within this path, even killing the king of the gods, Odin himself, before being put together by put to death and taken to task by Odin's avenging son, Vidar, the god of vengeance and silence. Now that we've covered these potentially world-destroying creatures, and we've talked a little bit about the construction of the Norse world, before we proceed to talking about Nidhogg and his significance within the Norse myth, as well as revisiting a little bit on Yggdrasil, we're going to take a little break. And before we do, it's important that I bring up to you guys' attention that we do have a proud new sponsor I'm very happy to have him along. He's a proud new sponsor of Totally Driven. He's funny, he's wacky, he's crazy, and he's totally driven. You guys are going to want to check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for some hilarious stand-up and, of course, a lot of great comedy sketches that he's been working on. Hard-working guy. We're glad to have him part of Totally Driven. Guys, we're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to revisit Yggdrasil and talk a little bit about why it's so significant within the Norse, when we discuss the Norse cosmos, and then we'll talk more about Malice Striker himself, Nidhogg. So, I'll see you guys shortly.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Black Mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your ghoul friend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stores page on Facebook.
And guys, welcome back. Sorry for the delay. A little technical issue there, but we've gotten through it. As we always do, we make it through. Now, before the break, we talked about the nine worlds that existed within Yggdrasil, which is the center of all that is and all that ever could be, the center of all possibility, the center of the universe itself. Now, we talked about the nine worlds themselves, but we didn't really talk about the importance of Yggdrasil itself. Now, while Yggdrasil is the center of the cosmos, it is the container within which all the universe exists, because it's important to remember that these nine worlds represent actual places. They are different planes of existence. They are different worlds. They're their own worlds, and they are all interconnected, interwoven within this great universe that is contained within Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil is, in essence, the source of the universe itself, and all life stems from Yggdrasil, because without Yggdrasil, there is no container to hold the nine worlds. The nine worlds are all interwoven within the roots of Yggdrasil, and so therefore, that makes our next character that we're going to be talking about, and really the major subject of today's discussion, Nidhoggr, very sinister indeed. So, Nidhoggr, or Nidhoggr, his name means curse striker, malice striker, or more aptly translated as he who strikes with malice. And he is the foremost of several serpents or dragons who dwell beneath the world tree Yggdrasil and eat its roots. Now, this is the highly injurious tree which holds the nine worlds of the cosmos. It holds all the universe within it. Nidhogg's actions have the intentions of pulling the cosmos into chaos, and he, along with his reptilian cohorts, can therefore surely be classified among the devourers, amongst the giants. Now, Nidhoggr is said to have a prominent role within Ragnarok, the cyclically recurrent event in which the giants actually succeed in destroying the cosmos. This does seem to be the case if we examine the Old Norse poem, the Völuspá, or the Insight of the Seeress. Nidhoggr is described as flying out from beneath Yggdrasil during Ragnarok, presumably to aid the giants and the other monsters in their cause to dethrone the Aesir gods from Asgard and cast it from the heavens. Now, later within this same poem, describes Nidhoggr as having presided over a part of the underworld known as Nasrant, the shore of corpses, where perjurers, murderers, adulterers, and all the worst kinds of men and mortals who die go. This conception of the afterlife, however, though, is marked by moral retribution. And is totally foreign to the indigenous worldview of the Norse and many other Germanic peoples, and must be, therefore, an instance of one of the many attempts of Christians to influence the poetry of Norse. Nonetheless, and that is in regards to Nastrand. Nonetheless, when we look at Nidhoggr is a very disturbing figure within the Norse cosmos. Not only is Nidhoggr actually chewing at the very fabric of the universe, but Nidhoggr has another very disturbing role within Norse mythology. In Viking society, Nid was a term for a social stigma implying the loss of honor and the status of a villain, making Nidhoggr even more sinister in nature. However, its name most likely refers to its role as a horrific monster or in its action of chewing the corpses of the inhabitants of Nasrand. And those guilty of murder, adultery, and one of the worst crimes within Norse culture are considered to be the prey of Nidhogg. Nidhogg is the devourer of life itself. And even in the afterlife, Nidhogg gets his prey. It is said in some translations of the myth that not only does Nidhogg chew on the roots of Yggdrasil, he chews on the roots of Yggdrasil until Yggdrasil bleeds, and he suckles himself on the blood of the life tree. The blood of life itself is morning tea for Nidhogg. Not only that, but Nidhogg is said to devour the corpses of the most vile individuals who die and is said to drink of their blood. It is said that a continuous stream of blood flows into the mouth of Nidhogg, and he is always thirsty and hungry, thus making Nidhogg a very terrifying personification, not really a personification per se, but a very terrifying entity and physical manifestation of hunger and thirst. Now, according to the Gylfaginning, part of the Prose Edda, Nidhoggr is the being who gnaws on the center root of Yggdrasil, and it's sometimes believed that the roots are trapping the beast from the world. It is believed that Yggdrasil's roots prevent Nidhoggr from devouring living souls. Nidhoggr is prevented from coming into the world of the living, and not just men, but dwarves and elves, the gods, all the cosmos is threatened by the hunger that Nidhoggr has. Nidhoggr is the devourer of creation itself, and is only held back by the continual stream of life that comes into the world. He is only held back by the fact that he's got a continual source of sustenance. But when the source begins to run low, Nidhoggr threatens to rise and claim the world of the living and claim the universe itself as his meal. Now, the root that traps him from this world is placed over Niflheim, and from it Nidhoggr gnaws from beneath. The same passage says that there is a being called Ratoskr, which is supposedly a mystical squirrel, that runs up and down the length of the ash, bearing envious words between the eagle and Nidhoggr the snake. There is the being that flies above Yggdrasil, which is oftentimes depicted as either an eagle or the crow. But within Norse mythology, we have another being known as Stormpale or Wind Witherer, but his name is Verdfolnir. He is attested in both the Poetic Edda and the Prose Edda from the 13th century, but he is solely attested in the Edda, and in both of these, he passes messages to Ratoskr, to Nidhoggr, the being that we've been discussing thus far. And the messages that they share are somewhat secretive. It's thought that provoking Nidhoggr and daring him to come to the surface, Verdfolnir is said to be passing these messages to Ratoskr to carry down to Nidhoggr. And these messages, while secretive in nature to us, are said to be very unpleasant to Nidhogg, which suggests that Nidhoggr is actually being taunted by another entity that lies outside of our world, outside of the plane of existence where life is. This entity is daring Nidhoggr to come up and claim our world for his own. He is daring him to come out from beneath this underworld that he is trapped in and come to the world of where basically to come into the universe and devour it. And this encourages Nidhoggr to continue chew through the roots of Yggdrasil in an attempt to get upward. Now, in the Skalds Skarpamal section of the Prose Edda, Snorri specifies Nidhoggr as a serpent in a list of names of such creatures. The names of such serpents, dragons such as Fafnir, Jormungandr, Nidhogg, Goinmoin, Grafnir, and Gobak, Ofnir, Svafnir, these are various entities that are thought to have existed in various stories that pass along from the Norse. And the Norse have a number of dragons, Fafnir being one of the dragons that defines a noble line in one of the major Nordic epics. Let me pull this up here. And that would be the Volsunga Saga, I should say. I'm sorry. The Volsunga Saga names Fafnir as a being, a great being, a great dragon slain by the hero Sigurd. And this is later adapted by the German people in a writing of a story called the Das Nibelungenlied, which is a great German epic featuring the great hero Siegfried, who kills a mighty dragon, bathes in its blood, becomes invulnerable, shares his secret with a lady, and long story short, she betrays him, he dies, and it's all very sad, and then everybody in the story basically ends up dead with the exception of a couple of people. But if you're interested in that story, check out Das Nibelungenlied. It's pretty interesting. Attila the Hun somehow ends up in there. Apparently the Germans got Huns confused with Hungarians, but I digress. Not a bad way to confuse things, I suppose. But nonetheless, as we return to Nidhoggr, he is one of many serpents or dragons mentioned within the Edda. But the poem mall identifies another set of beings, a number of beings which live within Yggdrasil, and it is said that the tree Yggdrasil itself suffers greatly from all the creatures that live on it. So all the worlds that Yggdrasil carries amongst its branches are basically draining Yggdrasil of its power, of its life force. Yggdrasil is the source of life, but it is waning under the weight. It is groaning under the fruits that it is born. The nine worlds are the fruits of Yggdrasil, and they are weighing the branches down. They threaten to bring it tumbling down. And all the while Yggdrasil suffers, Nidhoggr tears at the tree itself from the bottom and threatens to tear the world, the entire universe, to pieces in his jaws. Nidhoggr is the greatest threat within Norse mythology to existence itself. We tend to think of entities such as Fenrir and Loki and Hel as the premier villains within Norse mythology. These entities are represented as forces of nature so great and so powerful that they overcome the gods. But we don't think about Nidhoggr, the malice striker, who sort of lies in wait and steadily threatens to tear the entire universe to pieces. Now, while Ragnarok is said to be the never-ending winter, even in some of the stories, depending on which one of the variations of the many tales we have about Ragnarok, specifically if we look at the Edda, there's hope for the future in that the gods managed to preserve two individuals, and they are going to be the humans that repopulate the earth. They're going to take earth back, the world of men back for mortal people. They're preserved outside time and space for a time when the world will be safe for them to live in again. They will refound civilization, and they will revive the stories of the gods, and there's hope. There's a light in the darkness, so to speak. But Nidhoggr calls all that into question. Because if we look at Nidhoggr, he is constantly gnawing his way upward into
the universe. He is outside the universe, chewing his way in. And eventually, he is going to chew the very fabric of the universe to pieces until there is nothing left to hold it together. And when he does, it's said that the universe will plunge into chaos. And what does that mean for the nine worlds? Well, it means that there's potential for all nine worlds to be completely destroyed. There's potential for all nine worlds to be plunged into one another. They'll be destroyed by one another, or they'll merge, or there'll be no universe. The universe itself will be completely destroyed. Nothing will exist anymore. Needhogger's necessity to feed on life energy will destroy all that is, all that was, and all that ever could be. Needhogger represents the end all that we know. Every conceptualization of time, space, anything that we can conceptualize ends with Needhogger's devouring. And within Norse myth, there's really nothing that suggests that Needhogger will not continue to gnaw his way up through Yggdrasil's roots, and there's nothing to suggest that it ends well for us. For there's no moment within any saga where Needhogger dies. There is no moment where Needhogger's hunger and thirst for life energy ever ends. We're told that there is a coming of Ragnarok, but even when Ragnarok comes, Needhogger continues to chew his way up from another realm into the realms that exist, into the nine worlds. He is chewing his way from underneath the world tree, which means he exists outside our universe and is trying to get himself back in to this universe. And he is constantly being taunted by the eagle that flies just outside the heights of our universe. Constantly being taunted, being dared to seize his destiny. And his destiny is our destruction and the destruction of possibility itself. He is the ultimate destroyer. Even with death, there is possibility, but with a lack of existence, if nothing is, if you eliminate the future, if you eliminate everything that exists and you take away the possibility for the future, you've destroyed the entirety of the universe. And without the universe, there is nothing. There is the absence of everything. And I know that kind of is a difficult thing to conceptualize, because we ourselves have a hard time conceptualizing nothingness, the absence of things. When we see darkness, there still seems to be a substance there, right? There seems to be a substance to darkness. It just feels like even in the absence of light, there's something there, right? You know, if you go into a dark room, you know there's things in the room. But with Needhogger comes uncertainty, because we have no idea what the possibility of all the universe crumbling in on itself could lead to. We can't conceptualize our own. We can't even conceptualize the lack of our own existence. And we say things like, I wish I'd never been born. But we couldn't conceptualize in our own minds what a world without us would be like, because we can't see beyond ourselves. I don't care how generous of a person you are, how nice of a person you are. It has nothing to do with that. You can't look beyond yourself. You can to a degree. You can look beyond yourself a little bit, but there's only so far you can look. You can't see beyond the possibilities for your own existence. You can't picture a world without yourself in it, because you'd still be picturing your world, your ideal of a world without you. What you would picture the world without you to be like is still your view of what a world with you, without you in it is. And therefore, you're still influencing this world. So Needhogger is a very complicated figure within Norse mythology, because it calls into question what the absence of all life and the absence of all things that exist that we know of or think we know of what that means for us. The uncertainty of no universe. We think about the expanse of the universe and we think of possibility. We think of prospects. We think of, you know, life on other planets. We think about other worlds. When we talk about the nine worlds, there's all these different peoples, right? You've got the giants. You've got the gods. You've got the elves. You've got the dark elves. You've got the dwarves. You've got humans. You've got all these places, all these beings. You've even got fire giants and demons, fire demons, what have you. You get dragons and all this stuff and all these different places in these worlds. For us, we've got people and the potential in our universe. Now, those of us that look beyond these sorts of thoughts, those of us who look beyond this variation of this interpretation, I should say, of the cosmos, we think about the possibility of life on other planets, of different civilizations in other places. Maybe even our world at a different time, but in a different location. We think of all the possibilities of different dimensions and all these things. And so because we're thinking of all the possibilities, we don't think of the lack of possibility. It's too depressing to think that we are alone in the universe. It's too depressing to think that there's a possibility that there is nothing. It's too depressing to think about the fact that it's too difficult to realize no existence. We have no concept of not existing because we exist in the now. We live in the present. And so it is difficult for us to look even into the future a ways. We can sort of guess and we can sort of make assumptions and educated guesses based on the past. But we only have our own experience. We only have the past to consider. And because of this, we can't picture a world without ourselves. And because we can't picture a world without ourselves, it's very difficult for us as human beings to picture what a lack of a world would be if the world didn't exist. Most people would simplify that and say, well, if the world didn't exist, it wouldn't matter. And we wouldn't even need to conceptualize it because there'd be nothing to conceptualize because there'd be nothing there. But the lack of life existing, the lack of us, our universe being gone, makes us question things even more. The potential for Niedhogger to not only be a world ender, but also the ender of all possibility, that is incredibly frightening. Because we constantly struggle with possibility, probabilities. We are always calculating. We're always trying to take the next step, to find that next level, to reach out into the mysteries of space and reach out into the mysterious expanses of the universe and reach out of the mysterious expanses of the ocean's depths and find something, find the source, find God, find the gods, find our creators, find people like us, find intelligent life, find possibility. So badly do we not want to be alone in this universe that we never considered the fact there is something that exists within our universe, or something like Niedhogger, which exists outside of our universe, and the devastation that something outside our universe could bring to our universe, whether intentional or not. It's terrifying to think about an entity that literally exists outside of time, space, and every other conceptualization that we can come up with for existence. It calls into question one more thing for us, that if Niedhogger exists outside of our universe, what then is existence? How do we define what exists and what doesn't? Because Niedhogger exists, according to this mythos, he exists outside the cosmos, which means he exists outside the realm of possibility. Now, one might say, logically, that if he exists outside our realm, outside existence, outside the realm of possibility, then he doesn't exist, right? Sort of a contradiction in and of itself. But if Needhogger is this imminent threat to all that does exist, and he exists outside our ability to conceptualize him, that makes him all the more terrifying, because Needhogger then represents the antithesis of life itself. Needhogger represents the antithesis of creation. He is a force of destruction and consumption. Needhogger is essentially the complete opposite of Yggdrasil itself. He is the living embodiment of death. He is the living embodiment of the end of all possibility. Yggdrasil represents the nine worlds, represents the universe, the cosmos, possibility, life itself, the ability for there to be a future. But Needhogger represents the end, the limit, the absolute destroys everything. Which means that not only does Needhogger destroy the universe when he fulfills his purpose of devouring Yggdrasil, but Needhogger, in seizing his destiny, must either plunge all that exists into chaos and destroy everything, or choose to exist but be hungry creation all the time. So Needhogger is trapped beneath the world tree, trapped between fulfilling his destiny of destroying all possibility, destroying all that ever could be. But then having to exist outside time and space with no purpose and no sustenance. Needhogger's final to end all possibility, and by doing so, he destroys himself too. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed our discussion of Needhogger, and I hope this has kind of brought into perspective some things on Needhogger. Interestingly enough, Needhogger is not only a huge figure within Norse mythology. He's incredibly popular in popular culture. He's made a pretty big impact in modern culture. Needhog appears in many video games. He appears in Fate of the Norns, Tower of Saviors, Age of Mythology. He appears in the Final Fantasy series, number 14, in World of Warcraft, Ragnarok Online, an indie fencing game called Needhog, as well as Needhog 2. And although he doesn't appear in the game, he is shown as a comparison for Alduin, who is the main antagonist of the Elder Scrolls number 5 game, Skyrim, the very popular game. Needhogg is, in the sense, both Alduin and Needhogg feed on the dead and are symbols of the ultimate destruction of the universe and the world. In Alduin's case, he feeds on the souls of the dead in Sovngarde, the afterlife of the natives of the game in the game of Skyrim, and is prophesied to bring about the end of the world, gaining the title World Eater, which could be a reference, which is said to be a reference by many to Needhogg's gnawing at the roots of Yggdrasil. And in another game, Eve Online, a class of capital ships, the Minmatar carrier, are called the Needhogger. Needhogg is also the subject of a song called On a Sea of Blood from the album Jomsviking by the Swedish melodic death metal band Amon Amarth. If you guys don't know about Amon Amarth, they're pretty sweet heavy metal band, pretty interesting music that they have. But Needhogg features quite prominently in several video games, referenced a lot in popular culture, clearly an entity that has sort of surpassed expectations for his presence within mythology. It's kind of impressive how these stories make their way into popular culture, kind of grab hold and they never let go. But interesting, you know, a lot of people probably that are listening, they probably have never heard of Needhogger, or probably, you know, I mean, it's kind of cool that we have sort of characters like Needhogger within within a lot of mythological stories that sort of play a background role. But once you start digging deeper in them, they can have so much more to offer than some of the more, some of the more popular characters. You know, Loki has featured prominently in a number of films, particularly in the Avengers films and the Thor movies. But Loki is, you know, within the Norse myth, much, much more prominent than the simple supervillain. And yet you take a character like Needhogger, who's sort of almost an afterthought in the mythology, but when you look closely at the story at the stories told about Needhogger and the descriptions of Needhogger, really Needhogger is almost the most powerful entity within this universe. He is within this mythology because he exists outside of time and space. He exists outside of Yggdrasil itself. He is actually chewing his way into our universe, which is actually quite terrifying because it's not really clear where Needhogg is, except that he exists outside of Yggdrasil, and Yggdrasil holds the nine worlds, which is the universe itself, the cosmos. And so Needhogg is going to, you know, despite the fact that he's almost an afterthought in the poetic Edda and nearly an afterthought in the prose Edda as well as the Völuspá, it's pretty clear that he's going to feature very prominently in the end of all things. And I want to give you guys some source material to look at for some more Norse myth if you're interested. You can take a look at the Völuspá and Havamál. There's a great version of it done. It's compiled by Brian Wilton, and it's the Bellows translation. It's actually translated from Nordic runes. It's kind of neat. But you can take a look at that. You can also take a look. It's the Völuspá and the Havamál. I also, of course, want to recommend the prose and the poetic Edda. I always recommend both. They essentially say somewhat the same thing. They're both done by Snorri Sturluson. The prose Edda is known as the Younger Edda, sort of a transliteration of the original poems that are the Edda. But you can take a look at Snorri Sturluson's Edda. There's four books within it. There's the prologue, the Gylfaginning Ginnig, the Skaldskaparmál, and the Hattatal. And each one discusses the cosmos within Norse mythology. They discuss the various figures within Norse mythology and various legends and such as have been passed down. But keep in mind, when you read the Edda, that it is sort of tilted in a more Christian way, so it's a little bit more accessible for the non-pagan as well than it is so much for the pagan. If you're a Christian, you can still read the prose Edda, and I promise you're not gonna go to hell just because you read it. It's fine. It's okay. You're allowed to expose yourself to other cultures. It's totally cool. You might also want to check out the poetic Edda. The Stories of the Norse Gods and the Heroes, translated by Jackson Crawford. I always recommend the Poetic Edda, but the one that I would prefer if I were looking for a good edition is the Poetic Edda with Oxford World's Classics, translated by Carolyn Larrington. I think it's just a better translation of the Poetic Edda. That's just my personal opinion. So if you're looking to read the Edda in the poetic form, I would recommend that version simply because I think it's a solid translation. I always want to recommend best translation. I mean, if you want to read it in Old Norse and you can read Old Norse, kudos to you. Old Norse runes are Well, get ready to squint. They're not accessible to everyone. If you know how to read Old Norse runes, you deserve a pat on the back and you've probably thrown a few things in your time. I've seen a nice manuscript written in Nordic runes, and I kind of just threw things. That's just me. There's always something getting thrown. But I hope you guys enjoyed Needhugger and learning a little bit about Norse mythology, specifically the cosmos and some of the various cast characters from Norse mythology. I know we didn't cover every single character, but for that would take a lot longer than the time allotted to me to do, unfortunately. But we'll revisit it, and we'll talk a little bit more about Norse mythology in the future. I just really wanted to get you guys acquainted with Needhugger and some of the other characters from Norse mythology. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And, of course, as always, you guys want to catch me on Sunday mornings with Straight Football Talk, another one of Totally Driven's good shows. I hope you guys have been enjoying the other shows that we've been doing. TDR Rock Show, always exciting. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Mojo's Sports Show, Saturday mornings at 10, and the Best Little Horror Podcast in Texas. And, guys, don't be shy about calling in. You can always call in at 718-508-9883 when we're live. And, guys, we will talk to you. We would love to hear your lovely voices. I know I would really like to hear from you guys personally. I would love to talk to somebody. I hope you guys are enjoying what you're listening to, but I'm always down to hear feedback. And if you want to call in and argue with me about something, you go right ahead. You bring your big boy books, and we will argue about it. I am down. But don't forget to check out the Best Little Horror Podcast in Texas. They've been covering some cool stuff. I know they've been talking a little bit about some grindhouse films, but they've also done some great film recaps and breakdowns and some of the cool, behind-the-scenes sort of coverage of some of these horror movies. It's a great time to listen in. And there are Sundays at 4. You're going to want to catch them. But don't forget to catch me and Teddy the Bear Tate, Awesome Austin Thomas, Straight Football Talk, 9 a.m. on Sunday. Guys, there is going to be a lot to talk about. It was an exciting weekend in football. We saw a lot of people get blown out, saw a lot of people get shut out. We saw some injuries. We saw some very impressive plays. A lot of controversy. I know right now the NFL could be a touchy subject from some people. But, guys, I just got one thing to say about touchy subjects. Just get over it, baby, because that's the world we live in today. Everybody is going to be offended by something. But you know what? For me, I just don't care if I offend people. That's just how I roll. Sorry. I feel like everybody's just too sensitive today. We're always getting sensitive. Everybody wants a hug. Everybody wants a trophy. Everybody is upset about everything. And that's why we can't have nice things. That's really why it is. We can't have nice things because everybody's upset. But, guys, I've gone on and on about Needhugger and Norse mythology, and I roped in some football. That's all I've got for you guys today. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And I will catch you all Friday, actually, before Sunday, because I have an exclusive interview with a good friend of mine, Janai Garrett. I'm very excited to have her on the show. And, guys, don't be afraid. On Friday, 5 p.m., you can call in. It's going to be exciting because I've got a young woman trying to make her way in the rap world. She's going to talk about the struggles of coming up with your own raps, trying to make it in the quote-unquote rap game. I'm pretty excited to have her on. I always love it when I get a young student, a young scholar, a young writer, any young artist. I really like talking to these artists. It's always exciting. They've always got a fresh perspective of the world, and they've got a different way of looking at things. And that's very, to me, that's very cool. It's very unique. I really like talking to people about their talents and about what they're passionate about. So I hope you guys are going to tune in on Friday for that. I'm pretty excited about the interview. And, guys, she's going to talk about her music and some of the things she's working on. So you might want to check that out. That's Friday at 5. And don't forget to catch me Sunday at 9 with Teddy the Bear Tate and Awesome Austin Thomas. And, of course, don't forget to check out all of our shows with Totally Driven Entertainment. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram at Straight Football Talks Big D on Instagram. You can follow us, Straight Football Talk, on Twitter. You can also follow Totally Driven Entertainment on Twitter for the opportunity to win free tickets. Get the best information on your favorite shows, your favorite artists. If you're a rock and roll fan, we've got something for you. And if you're a big horror movie fan, be sure to check out our friends over there at horrornews.net. Check out everything they're working on. And, of course, check out the horror podcast throughout the week. We've got a horror podcast every Wednesday. So it's always a good time. We get some great interviews. I know we've had a lot of cool people on the show. But, yeah, check it all out. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on social media. We've always got something going on, and we've always got a little bit of everything for everybody. But I don't want to drone on forever. Appreciate everybody that's been tuning in, and I really appreciate everybody who supported me so far on the way here. See you guys on Friday. Enjoy the rest of your week. And guys, just stay driven.